The running theme throughout Sefer Bereishis, if you think about it, is the question of paternal favoritism, favoritism in general among children, and paternal favoritism in particular. It starts really all the way back in Parshas Bereishis with Cain and Hevel. It says they both brought offerings to God. It says Cain, that God did not accept, did not turn graciously to the offering of Cain. Instead, he turned toward Hevel, and that caused Cain's terrible jealousy, resulting in the murder, the first murder in the Torah, first murder in history. The murder of Hevel by Cain. We go on, we get to Avram Avinu. Avram has two sons, Yitzchak and Yishmael. So it says that Sarah eventually is unhappy with the way Yishmael is behaving. She says, Gare Shamazos Vespina, expel her, drive her out. And Avram says, Vayera Avram. Avram did not want to play favorites. Avram said, he's also my son. Hashem said, listen to her, Kol Asher Tomer Elecha Sarah Shema Bekola. Later at the Akedah, it says, the Pasuk says that God tells Avram, Kachna es Bincha es Yechidcha Asher Ahavta es Yitzchak, take the son that you love, and he describes him as Bincha, Yechidcha Asher Ahavta es Yitzchak. So,
it wasn't really as Yechidcha.
Sorry?
It's not really Yechidcha, it's not correct.
So the Chazal, the Medrash, go through those four adjectives. They say, Hashem said Bincha, Avram said, I have two sons. Right. Hashem said Yechidcha, Avram said, well, each one is Yachid to his mother. Asher Ahavta, so he said, I love both of them. Yeah, Avram again is trying very hard not to play favorites, not to admit that one of his sons is more significant than the other, until finally Hashem says Yitzchak. He names him black and white. That's the end of the story. Then, of course, we get to Yaakov and Esav. It says that Rivka loves Yaakov. Yitzchak loves Esav. Yitzchak tries to prefer Esav in the brachos. Rivka thwarts his plan. Rivka and Yaakov together, they steal the brachos. That causes fighting, that causes Yaakov to run away for decades, and that causes the whole beginning of the whole rift between Esav and Yaakov. Then we get down to the Shvatim. So that, of course, begins Yaakov's sons. That, of course, begins in Parshas Vayeshev. The Pasuk says, V'Yisrael, Ahavis Yosef mikol banav, kimen zikunim hulo. That Yaakov loved Yosef in particular, Ben Zikunim Hulo, different explanations of what that means exactly, but for whatever reason it says that Yaakov loved Yosef in particular, Vasla Ksonis Pasim, and he made him this special garment, the Ksonis Pasim, and the brothers were very jealous. It says, Vayiru Echav, the brothers saw, Ki Oso Ahav Aviyem Mikol Echav, he loved Yosef more than them, Vayisnu Oso, they hated him, Lo Yachlu Dabra L'Shalom, and they couldn't speak peacefully to him, they couldn't speak well to him, and that, again, that we'll discuss this more soon, that began the whole rift between Yaakov and the brothers with all of its disastrous consequences. Now, we're not actually finished. In the story of Yaakov and Yosef and Yosef's brothers, we actually have several other instances of favoritism running all the way down to this week's Parsha. In Parsha's Vayigash, we have after Yosef reveals himself to the brothers and says, Ani Yosef, and they have their reunion. So it says, before he sent them back to Eretz Yisrael to go bring down Yaakov, it says, L'chulam nasan la'ish chalifos malos. Yosef and his family gave to the brothers chalifos malos, suits, sets of clothes. Ulevin yamin nasan shlosh meyos kesef. He gave him, first of all, in addition to the clothing, he gave him a bonus of 300 kesef, and also chamesh chalifos malos. The brothers just got chalifos, and Binyamin got five times as many. So again, we find invidious distinctions. Binyamin got extra cash, and he got more clothing. And again, Yosef is not their father, but Yosef is playing favorites among his brothers. Now, that might be understandable. We'll discuss several reasons why he might have done that later, but again, we have the question, well, Gemara's going to talk about this, we'll see, favoritism again. All the way down to Parshas Vayechi, the beginning of Parshas Vayechi, our Parsha, where we have several more instances of favoritism among the brothers. First, we have in the beginning of the story where Yaakov has his last meeting with Yosef and Ephraim and Manasseh. So first, it says that Yaakov himself plays favorites. Yaakov takes his right hand and puts it on the head of Ephraim, even though he's younger. Yosef tries to correct him, and Yaakov says, no, he deserves special attention, special treatment, because Yaakov explains that Yosef said, Lo chein avi, ki zeh habachar. Yaakov said, no, yadati v'ni yadati. He's also going to be great, but his younger brother will surpass him in greatness. So again, Yaakov is playing favorites again among his grandchildren. younger brother often is superior in these stories, yes.
All the time, the younger brother is superior.
Pretty much,
yeah. In fact, nobody gets the birthright who's supposed to get the birthright.
Right.
None of the firstborn ever get the...
You mentioned that to me, one of the amazing parsha questions.
To you, I mentioned it. Now I'm mentioning it to the group. Nowhere in Genesis does the firstborn ever get the book. It's always shifted over to the group.
And then Yaakov, thank you. Then Yaakov goes on and he says, when he tells Yosef what's in store for him, he tells him, Ani nasati lecha shchem achad alachecha. I'm giving you an additional shchem portion, or the city of Shechem itself, but I'm giving you something extra above and beyond what your brothers are getting. Yaakov is still doing the same thing. He's still preferring Yosef. He's still favoring Yosef with special treatment. Then, of course, we go on to the brachos. Yaakov gives his various brachos to the shvatim. So again, it's difficult to know what all the brachas mean and why sometimes some of the brachas are longer than others, but while many of the shvatim get barely one pasuk, once you pass Yehuda, many of them get just a pasuk or two. Zvulun gets one pasuk, Yisachar gets just two psukim, Dan has a couple of psukim, three psukim, God has one, Asher has one, Naphtali has one. Then they get to Yosef. Yosef goes pasuk chaf beis, pasuk chaf gimel, pasuk chaf dalet, chaf hei, chaf vav. Again, in terms of sheer volume, again, number of words, Yosef is getting a lot more attention, a lot more kind of personal treatment than the brothers. So it's reparatious, and Yaakov and his sons in particular, we find special treatment, favoritism toward sons. So how do we look at this? Is this appropriate? I mean, presumably great biblical figures are doing it, Yaakov Avinu. Yet we find Chazal were actually critical, at least in one instance, of what Yaakov did. There is a Gemara in Masechah Shabbos. The Gemara on Daf Yudam and Beis. The Gemara says, Amar Rava bar Machasya, Amar Rav Chama bar Gurya, Amar Rav. La'olam al yishana adam b'no ben abanim. A person should never differentiate, should never treat one son differently from the other, should never play favorites among his sons. Because Shabishvil Mishkal Shnei Slime Milas, because of a lousy, a little thing that was weighed only two slime, Milas. Because of this little thing that he gave Yosef, the coat, the Ksonas Pasim, that garment that he gave Yosef, Shinasan Yaakov Yosef, Yosef Mishar Banov, Niskanabo Echov, Niskagal Adavar, Yardov Sandal Mitzrayim. That little thing, that one fateful decision, triggered the descent into Egypt and the terrible Gullus there, all because of what Yaakov did. So, and the lesson we learn is, don't do that. Don't do what Yaakov did. Apparently, don't favor one son more than the other.
Who's the commentator?
That's a Gemara. I just said the Gemara. That's a Gemara. So, Tosus has an interesting remark on this Gemara. Tosus says, the Gemara implies that as a causal relationship, it was Yaakov's favoritism which triggered the catastrophe in Egypt. Tosus says, "Blavachi nigzar." It was already predetermined. It would have happened anyway. It says, "Va'avodim v'inamosim." Way back in the Bris Ben Absarim in Parshas Lech Lecha already, God already says that they're going to spend time in Mitzrayim. So how can we say it was a causal relationship because of this act of Yaakov centuries, many years later? So Tosus says maybe that it got worse. Tosus says Shemaloha ya nigzer aleim inui kolkach alei day zesh rei arba mei hashana eschilu kodem shenol yitzchak lamed shanim. Tosus refers to the fact that exactly how the 400 years were counted. They weren't all in Egypt. They were only in Egypt for 200 and something years, 210 according to Chazal, and we count the 400 some of the time in Eretz Canaan. So maybe if not for Yaakov did, they would have spent more time in Canaan, and that would have counted for more of the 400 years and less time in Mitzrayim. So basically, it was worse. It's true that some of the exile, some of the problem with Mitzrayim was determined earlier, but some additional degree of it was caused by Yaakov's behavior. I would have said, and Tosus didn't say this, but we discussed this some weeks ago, the old question between determinism, between God's foreknowledge and free will, and in general, whenever we discuss cause and effect in this world, we discuss kind of schar va'onesh, we discuss theological cause, and we discuss proximate physical cause. I would have said the Gemara is giving kind of the derech hateva, the natural proximate cause, and the Bris Ben Absarim was giving the spiritual cause, the schar va'onesh, or as we said, avadim v'inamosim could just be God foreknowledge. It doesn't mean that's what caused it. Tosus feels that that was enough of a causal deterministic relationship between the Bris Mila B'Sarim then and this. Tosus says that they were both involved, that Yaakov's behavior wasn't the sole cause of the entire gullus of the Arvamei Hashanah, but it was at least the cause of the severity of it, or at least was a partial cause for the partial cause of the gullus, of the problem in the tribe. So that's an interesting question. I wasn't able to get to the bottom of this point. That Rav Shapps wants to know, I think, a very interesting question. When the Gemara says it was because of what Yaakov did, they went down to Mitzrayim, does the Gemara mean, again, I was kind of assuming the Gemara meant that it was a simple cause and effect relationship, that it's just good advice the Gemara is telling you, don't do it because you can cause problems. The other way to understand the Gemara, which I think Rabbi Shapps is suggesting, is that it was a punishment. It was a consequence imposed by God because Yaakov behaved incorrectly according to the Torah values. He was punished by having his children go to Mitzrayim. So I'm not sure how to read the Gemara. I'm not sure which is the more simple or straightforward reading of the Gemara. But how did you want to...
No, I'm just saying that seems to be
Tosus. Right, Tosus assuming it was an onish, it was punishment. So he says, we already find there was a different spiritual cause, a different scharva onish type of reason for what happened. Maram Lublin has a different approach. Maram Lublin says... Hold off on what he says. But anyway, that's the Tosfos. He qualifies the Gemara slightly by saying that Yaakov's behavior may not have been the sole cause, but it was a partial cause. Now, as we noted earlier, there are numerous other examples of favoritism by Yaakov himself, by Yosef later, in the continuation of the biblical narrative. And the Gemara itself picks up on this. The Gemara itself acknowledges this in Maseches Megillah. In Maseches Megillah on Daf Tazayin, we're discussing really the story of Purim there, but this comes up in passing. The Gemara brings the pasuk that Yosef, when he gave the presents to his brothers, it says, "Lekulam nasan leish chalifos malos." To everyone he gave clothing, ulvinyamin nasan, five chamesh chalifos. The Gemara highlights the irony of this. Efshar davrish and istar ba osa tzadik. This was the thing that caused Yosef all this grief, all this years, the favoritism caused him all this misery for decades. He himself should make the same mistake of playing favorites to his brother.
It's not a mistake. This is a test of the brothers.
Okay. This was after he already.
Yeah, but he's still testing them to see if they have the same weakness.
It's also a signal to his father.
Right. Sorry. Yeah. So, let's just consider what the Gemara says first, and the Gemara asked this question. We can debate the other answers. Maybe there are a few things we might have said, but the Gemara asked this question: how could he do this? So the Gemara answers, and the Gemara brings this Gemara in Shabbos that it says the whole Mitzrayim thing started because of what Yaakov did with regard to Yosef. So Amar Rabbi Binyamin Bar Yefes, Remez Ramazlo. This is what I think someone was alluding to. It was a Remez. There was a symbolism behind this gesture. Remez Ramazlo, Sha'asud Ben, Lotzis Imenu, Shiyetzi Milafanov, Milafne Amelech, Bechamisha, Levushe Malchus. It was a Remez that later on, millennia later, in the time of the story of Purim, there would be someone who would be rewarded, who would be honored by appearing before the king in royal garb. Shenemar u'Mordechai yatzah b'levush malchus tcheles v'chur. I don't remember all the things in the pasuk, but it lists five types of garments that Mordechai wore, and that was the remez. Mordechai was, of course, a descendant of Binyamin. Mordechai ben Kish ish Yemini. Mordechai was a great many generations down from Binyamin. So Yosef was hinting to Binyamin, a prophecy, I guess, that generations down the line, you're going to have a descendant who will be a great man and will merit the wearing of the five types of royal garb. So as we said, you know, what Gemara was asking there, we might have answered a number of other possibilities to why Yosef would do this. First of all, Yosef wasn't their father. You know, one could certainly argue that a person is particularly hurt when his father plays favorites. If his brother plays favorites, you know, see, if you don't have, if you're not your brother's favorite, it's not the end of the world. That's what I might have answered psychologically. Mefarshim give several other possibilities, suggest several other answers.
This is very simple to understand.
Yes.
No, it's not complicated. Just because it's beyond our imagination. They are Nevi'im. They are still through the eyes of Nevuah. They have to do that.
That is true.
When the same token, I can talk to God. Why you make somebody poor, somebody rich, somebody this, somebody that? So you put in favor between your children to God. We are your children. We are children of God. Why right. Somebody is poor, somebody is rich?
Why don't we get jealous? Yeah.
God is doing it too, is what you're saying.
So it is.
Yeah.
It is the beyond our imagination to think of. This is the way
that,
it is.
That is a good point, but...
and God chose Abraham. You could say he chose Abraham.
The one that we cannot...
It's not just favoritism.
And Abraham wasn't the firstborn either.
That's right. I think one of his brothers, one of his brothers
so
is older.
What's the lesson? There's something that's more important than favoritism, which is merit, maybe. The people that got the birthright, they had higher merits than the other ones.
Oh, yeah. So these are all good points. But in the meantime, this is what the Gemara says. Now, in the work Yifei Tar, an early Sephardic commentary on the Medrash from about the 16th century or so, he points out Yosef actually favored Binyamin twice. Once was the one where the Gemara discusses in Parshas Vayigash, after he revealed himself as Yosef, it says he gave them 5 suits and he gave them and cash. But we find earlier, back in last week's Parsha, Phil is saying that in Parshas Niketz, when the brothers went down to Mitzrayim the second time, before Yosef revealed, and they finally Yosef demanded they bring down Binyamin, so he dragged down Binyamin. So when they had their banquet, so it says, "Vayisa masos me'ez panav," they got presents from him, aleihem. But teirav masos Binyamin masos kulam chamesh yadus. Binyamin's portion was multiple times theirs. It was 5 yadus. Binyamin got 5 times as much as them. So the question is again, so why does Gemara wait till Parshas Vayigash to ask why Yosef was playing favorites? Is another account of favorites, which I forgot in my initial list, another account back in Parshas Miketz, where Yosef plays favorites earlier. Why didn't the Gemara ask that question? So the Yifei Tar brings several interesting answers. First of all, he says, Binyamin was apparently a big deal for him to come down. They didn't want to bring him the first time. They had to drag him out from his father's mechek aviv, from his father's bosom. So it was a big deal. So he schlepped him out there. So they wanted to make up for it. They felt bad for having dragged him down, for making a big fuss and having him dragged down by his brothers. So they understood. All right, he's giving him some extra presents to make up for the trouble of schlepping him out there. All the brothers were schlepped out, but I guess for Binyamin it was harder. He was younger. Whatever the issue was, that's why the Gemara didn't ask that particular question. And even though later it turned out the whole thing was, they saw later that it was Taki's brother, but they understood this was part of Yosef's charade to pretend that he was being the mean, or the going back and forth, the viceroy of Egypt. First he's all tough and makes him drag him down, then he felt a little bad, so he gave him this extra, this special treatment to kind of mollify him, to make up for the annoying him like this. Regarding the pasuk of the Shechem Echad al Achecha, the fact that Yaakov in Parshas Vayechi, Yaakov gives Yosef the extra Shechem, what's the story with that? So again, the Yifei Tar brings several explanations for why Yaakov could do that without triggering the same jealousy that had proven so fatal, so devastating so many years before. He brings from another sefer, Minchas Yehuda, who says that since Yosef was the king, they understood that the brothers wouldn't have been jealous. They would have understood that special gifts are due to the king, royal prerogative. Not sure that would have made the brothers feel so good. Not only is he the king, the father gives him extra presents, but that's what he suggests. Then he suggests another pshat based on Rishonim that Yaakov was giving Yosef extra stuff because he was being tasked with the arranging the burial. He was being tasked because he had the power. He was the one able to do it. But the fact is, he was having this extra mission involving extra time, effort, diplomatic sensitivities. He had to talk to Paro, I guess. So as payment for that, as payment for his extra efforts on that behalf, the brothers understood that he maybe deserved a little bonus. Another interesting idea, he says, is that the brothers had behaved very badly toward Yosef. They sold him. And they were terrified when he revealed himself as their brother. They knew he had their fate in his hands, and he very understandably could have paid them back, Mida Kneged Mida, could have taken his revenge on them, and he didn't. And he famously was Meshalem Tova Tachasra. Yosef was extremely gracious. He said he was a tzaddik, and he's extremely gracious. He said, you meant it for ill, and Hashem Chashav Latova, and then nothing happened, don't worry, all's well that ends well. So the brothers understood that in exchange for Yosef's extraordinarily gracious behavior toward them, at this point he deserves a little bit extra. He deserves, you know, more than they do from Yaakov. So at this point they weren't so jealous anymore. They understood that that they were thankful they were in the position they were, and they weren't getting worse, and they wouldn't have been jealous based on what Yaakov did. Okay, so these are, you know, various terutzim, the Gemara's terutz. One interesting thing people point out is an interesting comment of the Gaon of Vilna. The Gaon asks a kind of interesting, very pragmatic question. He says, when the Gemara asks how come Yosef could give more clothing in Parshas Vayigash, more clothing to Binyamin, so the Gemara says it was a remez, it was a subtle prophetic hint on the future. The Gaon seems to assume the brothers would not actually have understood that. So I'm not sure why he assumes that. You can understand the brothers were also Nevi'im. Maybe they also understood, maybe he explained it to them, but the Gaon seems to understand that the brothers did not understand that was Yosef's motivation. So he says, what does it help that Yosef had this lofty symbolic reason? It still would have caused jealousy. So how does it answer the question? So the Gaon says that really what happened was, really the brother gave them, the other brothers received one really expensive, nice suit. Maybe he's worth $1,000. And when Binyamin received five suits, he received five $200 suits. So in total value, the gifts were the same. So the Gemara's question is that, okay, if the gifts were the same, what was the point? So why just make this distinction? If they're all getting $1,000 worth of clothes, so either give them all one expensive suit or give them all five cheaper suits. So why give him one way and them the other way? The answer is because of the remez. But the remez didn't actually mean, that they got different values. They ended up with the same value. The Tar Tamima and Chumash, for Baruch Epstein, has an interesting point. He says that if you look in the text of the Chumash, the what we call the Ksiv, the Masoretic reading of the Psukim, so the word Khalifos is spelled twice. It refers to the Khalifos of the other brothers and the Khalifos of Binyamin. So the word Khalifos, when given to the other brothers, is without a vav. And the word Khalifos, when given to Binyamin, the word Khalifos to the other brothers is with a vav. Binyamin, it says, Chamesh Khalifos without a vav. And the Tartuna says, we find in other places, Chazal Darshan, when a word is chaser, it means diminution, it means a relatively smaller amount. He wants to read into the Psukim, he says, the Masoretic text is an allusion to the idea of the Gaon, that the Khalifos of the brothers and the Khalifos of Binyamin were not identical, that they were ultimately, the total gift value was equal, but they were structured differently to be a remez for the... It was structured differently to be a remez for this thing about Mordechai with his five royal garments. Now the Marsha and other Akharim have an addition. One last question on this before we turn to the more halachic aspect of this discussion. The Marsha and others point out that besides the clothing, where they had five times as many, Binyamin had five times as much as them, there was also cash. It says Binyamin got also Shlosh Meas Kesef. 300 kesef from the brothers doesn't say anything about cash. So the Gemara only deals with the garments. The Gemara does not ask the question why giving Binyamin all this cash wasn't favoritism. So again, the Mefarshim try to give different explanations for why the Gemara's admonition against favoritism doesn't apply to the cash payment. They say maybe it wasn't as public, the suits were kind of a public display of affection, so they would have created more jealousy. The cash could have been discreetly slipped in an envelope, it would have been less likely to cause jealousy. Whatever it is, This is the point of the Gemara. The Gemara says that in general, at least for a father, it is wrong to show favoritism. It'll either have bad consequences and a cause and effect idea, or it's an avera and you may get punished for it. The clearly it's the wrong thing to do, putting aside all these exceptions and terutzim for the other cases, but ultimately, fundamentally, Chazal say it's the wrong thing to do, and a father should be careful not to do this. So for the remainder of our time, I want to discuss some of the halachic ramifications of this.
So for the 300 cash, there is no explanation?
So there are some explanations. One explanation I suggested was it was less public. The cash is just a small thing. It's private. It's not a demonstration to everyone. I like you more. You have a fancy suit. You have a cheap suit. That was more embarrassing. If you just gave Benjamin quietly in private a small envelope with a check in it, then that was less likely to cause the same level of anger. Because it wasn't as public. It wasn't as blatant. And there are other terutzim that give. Also, I think I didn't have time to go through all the terutzim, but we're not really discussing so many of the terutzim to that question. We'll leave that as an open question.
Did Yosef and Binyamin have some closer kesher than the other brothers?
So some of Arjun point that out too, that they were brothers from the same mother, and the others were not. So some of Arjun point this out, that when the Gemara asked why Yosef could do this, again, some suggest, well, the answer could have been because they were simply close to relations. They were also, additionally, and perhaps an even more cogent point, is that Benjamin was the only brother who was not involved in the sale of Yosef. A, because he wasn't there, and B, because he never would have participated, perhaps because he was his close brother. So some of Russians suggest that too, that of course Benjamin could get more because he wasn't guilty like they were, and then he never mistreated him, and he was a closer brother. So why the Gemara didn't answer this is a good question. That might explain the other question about the 300 cash. So these are all possible arguments for or against. But now we'll just return to the Gemara and Shabbos, the Gemara and Megillah, the basic point that in general a father should not favor one son because it's wrong and it can lead to very serious consequences, jealousy, hatred, dissension, and ultimately catastrophe. Now, this is actually a halachic statement. The Gemara is kind of an agadah, they're like a medrash, but many of the poskim understand that this is actually a halacha that a father should not do this. Now, it is not in the Shulchan Aruch, and several acharonim ask why not. Rabbi Yeshaya Berlin, not to be confused with Isaiah Berlin, the first Yeshaya Berlin, Rabbi Yeshaya Pick. Sorry?
It's not
in the Shulchan Aruch, no. It is in the Rambam, it is in the Torah, but and many acharonim bring it down. So it has been picked up. I'm calling it a halacha because it has been picked up by the halachic codifiers in general, but it's not in the Shulchan Aruch itself. And it's not clear why. Various acronym point this out, and they don't really understand. The other posts can do say it. Nobody brings a dissenting view. Nobody makes any argument that it's not the halacha for some reason. It's Gemara and Shabbos, Gemara and Megillah, no dissenting view. Common sense, I think, probably supports it, and not clear why the Shulchan Aruch leaves it out. The Rambam's formulation is Sivu Chachamim, the sages have commanded. It's a whole area of scholarship in Rambam, how to interpret when he says Sivu Chachamim. Does that mean it's literally a Sivu, literally an Isur Midrabanan? Does that mean it's good advice? Does it mean it's they're urging you, it's good counsel? But whatever it is, the Rambam does bring it in his Yad HaChazakah, which is more or less a halachic compendium to the laws of Yerusha. Sivu Chachamim, Shelo Yishana Adam Ben Abanim B'chayav. The Rambam uses the word during his lifetime. We'll see the significance of that we'll discuss presently. Afilu B'davar Mu'at, even a small amount, like the Gemara emphasized in Shabbos, this paltry kesonis pasim was not a very large, expensive present, apparently. And the Rambam says, Shelo Yavo L'Idei Tachrus B'kina. They shouldn't lead to competition and jealousy. Kachaya Yosef and Yosef, which is what happened. He transparently refers to the Gemara in Shabbos. You shouldn't do this because it will lead to bad consequences. And the causal relationship is actually a little bit inverted from the Gemara. The Gemara says, don't do it. And if you do it, you're going to pay the price, as happened to Yosef with his brothers. The Rambam almost implies that the reason you shouldn't do it is because it can lead to what happened when that's why you shouldn't do it, because it has bad consequences. That's not just a punishment. That is why you should not do this, because it leads to machlokas, to jealousy, and to problems. Now, the key thing to understand is this prohibition, this injunction, this advice, whatever you want to call it, is closely related to another rule also brought in Hilchos Yerusha. This rule is brought in Shulchan Aruch. That is a rule of the Gemara that appears in a number of other places, in the Maseches Ketuvos, in the Maseches Bava Basra. That is the well-known Isser, not so well-known Isser, the Isser of Avurei Achsanta. The Avurei Achsanta, Aramaic phrase for transferring away assets from the rightful heirs. There is an Isser, the Gemara says, that, or again, maybe not an absolute Isser, but there's a strong conduct disfavored by Chazal against writing a will that disinherits the heirs. Certainly, if you disinherit a son in favor of someone who's not a son, there are all kinds of discussions in the postgame. We'll touch on a few of them maybe soon, but disinheriting your sons entirely, disinheriting one son in favor of other sons, disinheriting sons in favor of daughters, isn't giving a bechor the same as anyone else. And there are many, many disputes among the postgame about what exactly is intended by this iser. We basically have this in two places. One is in Baba Basra, one is in Ksuvos. In Ksuvos, the context actually is the giving a dowry by a father to his daughter, which was a common practice in rabbinic times, and later times too, that the father would give his son-in-law upon marriage, would give him a hefty chunk, a large, a substantial chunk of his estate. So the Gemara says, how are you allowed to do that? The Gemara actually finds biblical support, textual support for this from Sukkim and Nach. The Gemara says, how are you allowed to do that? The Gemara says, why are we allowed to write dowries? What happened to this idea of not doing avuri aksanta, of not transferring property away from the rightful heirs? So the Gemara says, lo tebe avuri aksanta. There's an injunction, an instruction of Chazal. You should not get involved. I feel we brought bishul, we brought tava. Even if you think you're doing a mitzvah, you're taking money away from a son who is not deserving of it to a more deserving son. You shouldn't do that. You should never do that. So the Gemara says the justification is, you're right, that's at the Kanta Rabbanan, that's a rabbinic injunction or institution. Question whether it's Daraisa or Rabbanan, biblical imperative or rabbinic imperative, but you're right, that is an imperative not to do that. But giving dowries is also at the Kanta Rabbanan. Giving dowries was seen as essential, as critical to marrying daughters off. It would be much harder. Some things never change. Anyone who's read Victorian literature, from Austen to Trollope, you know, knows that it's difficult to marry off girls without dowries, and I hear it's true today, too. It's difficult to marry off girls without... girls who don't have money have a harder time sometimes than girls who do have money, so giving dowries is very important to helping your daughters get married. Whether it should be, shouldn't be, you know, you can debate, but that's the way the world works. So even though there's a mitzvah not to take money away from the rightful heirs, which are the sons, there's also a mitzvah to help your daughter get married, and that overrides at least giving a dowry of a certain size, that justifies giving dowries. The Gemara in Baba Basra discusses the same thing, that there's a mitzvah not to tamper with Yerusha of the Torah, to follow the Yerusha of the Torah, but in certain cases, for certain reasons, there's an exception. There's extensive discussion in the Achronim. One of the most commonly discussed questions is tzedakah. People frequently, as part of their wills, as part of their tzava, as part of their last wills and testaments, would give money to tzedakah, to memorialize themselves, to have a legacy of some sort, to do mitzvahs before they go before the heavenly throne of justice. So there's actually a major debate in the postgame whether giving tzedakah is a legitimate reason to violate Yerusha, to disinherit the family. So that's a very important distinction too. One of the other heavily discussed points in the postgame is what exactly is prohibited by the Isra of Avuri Achsanta? Totally disinherit a son, or even to take away a large part of the Yerusha, or even to take away a small part of the Yerusha? Again, there are great debates over this. Some postgame say the Isra is only triggered by taking away all the Yerusha, or a very large part of the Yerusha, but a small gift, or even a substantial gift, if it's not most of the Yerusha, is fine. Other poskim disagree. There's almost nothing settled in the sugya. You can find poskim on all sides of all these issues. What's not really debatable is that we know, again, the minhag, the tradition certainly was that people did give gifts in their wills. People did write, and people did give money to tzedakah, to other people. As a practical matter, you pretty much have to adopt at least one of these possible heteros, either that limited amounts are permitted or that tzedakah is permitted. Maybe certain other heterim we'll discuss soon, but again, the issue is very much not settled, but in general, there is an issur, in the worst case scenario, of completely disinheriting a son and giving all the property to somebody else. That is something that is frowned upon by Chazal. Now, again, historically, as I said, A, we know that people gave money to tzedakah, and B, dowries were frequently given both in Talmudic times as well as throughout the period of the Jewish history. We have wills. Halacha has a kind of somewhat complicated attitude toward wills. How to structure a will to be valid according to halacha is a fascinating topic. We'll have to leave it for a different time. But the form of the will that was traditionally practiced in Ashkenazic Jewish communities was known as the Shtar Chatzi Zachah. It's an elaborate technical way of structuring a shtar to make a will valid according to halacha. And these texts go back to at least 500 years. The time of the Nachla Shiva, 16th century, we have these various documents that attest to the fact that wills were given. Frequently, the will, and these documents were typically done to give money to a daughter or to a son-in-law. Upon marriage, the son would often ask for a shtar. Today we do it as a will. Back then, they were often given more as a form of a dowry settlement. A man would marry a rich man's daughter, and he would say, I would like, as part of the marriage settlement, I would like a document that says that on your passage, I and my wife will inherit a stake in your estate, and they would give a special shtar chatzi zarcha, which would guarantee him some portion of the estate of the father-in-law. So again, the postmen have been debating for 500 years why this type of behavior of giving money to the daughters and son-in-laws does not violate the Torah's commandment that sons inherit and not daughters. And there are many different terutzim. Some terutzim are, as long as you're not totally disinheriting the sons, you're just giving away a portion of the estate, it's okay. Many of these documents would explicitly exclude certain asset categories. They wouldn't apply to real property, real estate. They would only apply to cash or personal property. They would exclude sfarim sometimes. Some say that was because he wanted to leave at least one asset category in which Yerusha Daraisa would apply. Some say that any document which is structured not as a will but as a bequest while someone is still alive is not subject to the rules of Shtar Chatzi Zachar. So as long as it's structured to take effect before death, it's okay. But in any event, you know, we're not going to get into all the details of Shtar Chatzi Zachar and Avuri Afsanta. But this, as I've said, this prohibition, this inyan of not transferring Yerusha away from heirs is a closely related isser in structure to the issur of not playing favorites. Not playing favorites is an idea of kinna and tacharis. You shouldn't favor sons because that can lead to dissension and tragedy. You also shouldn't tamper with Yerusha of the Torah. Why not? You shouldn't tamper with the divine, with the biblical inheritance rules. The reason for that is less clear. Some of them say because you shouldn't disagree with the Torah's wisdom. If the Torah in its wisdom structured inheritance like this, you shouldn't try to say that you know better and you want to do things differently. Some say that it's also possibly related to kinna and, well, not sure about that, but there's a very interesting passage in the Pesach Choshen, Reb Blau, a leading contemporary authority on Choshen Mishpat. He wants to know if... He wants to know, he's returned for the other issue, that favoring sons or tampering with the normal settlement of the Torah, arbitrarily favoring sons, might be a problem of causing kinna. He wants to know if a father wishes to, as many fathers do, if a father wishes to make the sons equal to the daughters, give the daughters equal portions to their sons upon his death, which is a common practice today, even in very Haredi circles.
Really?
I'm not saying it's universal, I'm saying it's common.
So they don't favor the firstborn anymore?
Many do not. So, and there is debate about whether that's appropriate or not.
The girls get half.
Half.
The boys want.
Right. So what Moshe is saying, that among the Sfardim, the girls get half as much as the son, that actually is alluded to in the language I mentioned earlier. In the Ashkenazic circles, too, the document often used to be referred to as the Shtar Chatzi Zachar. So Chatzi Zachar, which literally means half of the male, which alludes to what Moshe just said, that very often the tradition was, the custom was, that the girls would be receiving half as much as the sons did. And still today, some people do that. But there's also, there are some people who do what we call Kulo Zachar, where the daughters get as much as the sons. Maybe that's less common among the Sfardim. I've spoken to various contemporary Dayanim in Eretz Israel and asked them about what they thought about whether the right thing to do, if someone comes and asks a Shailah, but which is the right thing to do, to do same, 100% the same, or to do half and half, and I got different answers. At least one Dayan told me that no, that these prohibitions indicate that you really should try to make you should not make the daughters equal. The Torah said no, and give them something, but don't give them the same as the sons. Others have said no. Others have said that today society expects it. Today it'll lead to worse fighting maybe if you don't do it. And today I believe I have heard that Kulo Zachar is a perfectly acceptable, perfectly legitimate thing to do. And if you look at this passage of Reb Blau in his Pesach Choshen, he writes that he's discussing the problem of kinna that we started with, the idea that tampering with the arrangement of the Torah might create jealousy. So he says, giving one son more than another creates jealousy. Let's say if you want to give your daughter equal to your son, he says, there's no jealousy involved. All you're doing is making the girls equal to the boys. And on the contrary, he says, sometimes if you don't give the girls anything, they'll be jealous. They'll be jealous of the sons. If you make them equal, that's a good idea. You're making, that's a good idea. You're making the daughters equal to avoid jealousy. Maybe that's a good thing, he says. And then he says he heard that sometimes people want to take away from the, people want to take away from the Bechor because they think that the other sons will be jealous of the Bechor. So he says, but the poskim seem to say that you should not do that. That's wrong. That's a vurech santa again to do that. So Reb Lau says that to give the daughters equal to the sons, he feels like Phil. He feels that it's not appropriate. He says iku yisuru dehavaras nachla, to make the daughters equal to the sons. That's considered unacceptable tampering with the Yerusha of the Torah. Similarly, he says, he's exactly like Phil was saying, that making the Bechor equal to the other sons, taking away entirely his unique, special portion, is also, he says, you're being mevatel tzivu Yashem Yisparach to give Pishnayim, so you should not do that. What about the problem of kinah? Lemaisa, I'm an older son. If I don't get more, so if I get more, does that mean my brothers will be jealous of me? He said, if my sisters don't get anything, does that mean my sisters will be jealous? So he says no. He says that as long as you're following the Torah, you don't have to worry about jealousy. Jealousy only is if you arbitrarily give a son more. The Torah didn't say give a son more if he's not the Bechor. That you have to worry about jealousy. But if you simply follow the Torah, even if the Torah's instructions are inherently not completely equal, egalitarianism is a value. It's not the only value. The Torah felt that in Yerusha, strict egalitarianism is not the way to go. And if you try to impose strict egalitarianism, you're being oker Yerusha Daraisa. That's wrong, and you don't have to worry about kinah as long as you are following the laws of the Torah. As I said, I don't think everyone agrees. I think it is somewhat common, even in fairly Haredi circles, to give the sons equal to the daughters. Now, as I mentioned, we've discussed two possibly surim. One of them is the issur of kinah of Al Yishana, the criticism of Yaakov Avinu. And the other one is the Vureach Santa, the idea that in general, when disposing of one's property upon death, one shouldn't deviate entirely from the rules of the Torah. As we mentioned, the Shulchan Aruch does not bring down Al Yishana. The Torah and other poskim do. And there is some confusion in the poskim. There is some debate as to whether Al Yishana, the criticism of Yaakov Avinu, is that mechaim? Is that while people are alive? That while you're alive, you shouldn't make gifts? But upon death, maybe it's not as bad? Al Yishana, you should not change. You should not alter. You should not. In this case, it means don't create a difference, an invidious difference between the two sons. So some say that, as we noted earlier, the language of the Rambam was that you shouldn't create distinctions. You shouldn't do it while you're alive. Some poskim, beginning with the Bach, have understood that does not apply to a will. This issur of treating sons differently is only like when Yaakov was doing it while he was alive, at least the case of Yaakov and the Ksonet Pasim. While you're alive, you shouldn't make such distinctions. The Torah implies that Al Yishana applies even upon death. The Torah, when the Torah formulates these halachas, first he says that Chazal did not approve of people who tamper with the Yerusha, all in Hilchas Nachlas and the laws of Yerusha. Midas Chasidus, he says, you shouldn't get involved, you shouldn't participate in such a will, you shouldn't be involved in the general creation of such a will. And Rabbi Seinu Zalamru, the rabbi said, Shlo Yishana Adam ben Abanim. He implies that this is all the same idea, that this issur of not preferring one son over another, even with a little bit, even with a small amount, applies even after death, even in the form of a will. But the Bach and others disagree. The Bach and others say that no, that in a will things are different. It means that while someone's alive, he shouldn't give arbitrary gifts. But in the settlement of a will, he has more flexibility. He's allowed to treat the sons differently. Why should that be is not entirely clear. Why should we be less concerned about jealousy, about creating strife and dissension, and why should it be different? So again, we return to the Torah Tumimah, who says an interesting idea, which I don't fully understand, and I saw another sefer also says he doesn't understand what the Torah Tumimah is saying. The Torah Tumimah says there's a mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. Sons, heirs, are commanded to respect the will of their father. If they get jealous and create fights, That's not respecting the will of the father. I mean, yeah, but that's not the point. The point is jealousy is always wrong, but it's human nature to be jealous. So I don't know why it helps to say that you're supposed to respect your father's will. It's still human nature. You're not supposed to sell your brother as a slave either. But it's human nature to get upset if your father is preferring it. So I don't really understand how much of an answer that is, but that is the opinion of some achronim, that the prohibition of Al Yeshana, the idea of Al Yeshana, does not apply in a will after death.